And welcome. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, your host, and we appreciate you being here today listening. And we are talking today about reasons to be thankful, financially anyway, and otherwise. A lot of reasons to be thankful. Want to remind you before we get started with the show, if you're listening and you have a question at any time, you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-888-6-ADVICE, and that will get you to Wealth Enhancement Group. You can always email questions as well to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But for the next hour, we want you to be a part of the show and text or call 651-461-9226. Now here is Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and Financial Advisor, Bruce Helmer. Hello to both of you. Bruce, Peg.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hi, Peg. Hi, Susie Jones. And hello, listeners. This is our last show before Thanksgiving. So listeners, if you're listening today, it's probably just before Thanksgiving or close to Thanksgiving. And happy Thanksgiving, Peg, and happy Thanksgiving, Susie, and all listeners. But Peg, we're as Susie said, Susie kind of teed it up for us. We're going to talk about reasons to be thankful, and yes, part of this is economic or financial, but part of this is just other reasons to be thankful and count our blessings. You know, 24 is a tough year in a lot of ways, right? It's a presidential election year. There was a lot of uncertainty. I'm certainly thankful that the election is now over, but a lot of Americans, you know, were suffering with higher prices with inflation, and that was reflected when they went to the ballot box and their vote. They felt that even though you and I, Peg, have been saying all year that the things that we look at economically, things like the stock market, things like GDP, low unemployment, and so forth, the economy overall macroeconomically looked good, but to people buying groceries, it didn't feel good, right? It, you know, a bag of groceries that 3 years ago cost $100 now cost $125 or $130, and people were struggling, you know, to be able to afford groceries, and so they voted for change. So we're going to talk about the economy. We're going to talk about all the things that look good and all the things that we can be grateful for. And Peg, get us rolling. Did that set us up, or what do you want? How do you want to lead into this, Peg?
Yeah, that was perfect, Bruce. I think, you know, talking about the economy and how resilient it has been, but yet I'm so sensitive to people that are hurting because things are just costing more. And I forever have ranted on this show that wages just haven't kept up with the cost of goods and services. So the U.S. economy is still showing signs of resilience. I wanted just to mention, because we say GDP a lot on this show, and you said gross domestic product, but not a lot of people, and I talk to my clients about this too, is, well, what does that actually really mean? Well, all it does is measure the monetary value of, you know, goods and services. It kind of measures the health of the economy. So we talk about the GDP being good, and generally, the labor market is strong and stable. And so the U.S. continues to add jobs, which is great. Even though the labor market is a little bit slower, it remains steady. Now, you know, with the new president-elect Trump, you know, some people have a little bit of concerns because they kind of want to shrink, number one, the government. Like, there's so many government workers. You see headlines already about that. So that makes people a little nervous. But I think the history has always proven, no matter who's in as the president, they tend to follow, you know, these tasks and things that they want to accomplish. But yet the economy in itself, you and I working and working together, does tend to grow the economic stability over time. So I think there's going to be, Bruce, some little bit of, oh, I'm worried about that, I'm worried about that. But let me just add one point. 2024, if you were an investor, has proven to be a good year to be in the markets. And remember how I said before the election, family and friends were asking me, should I get out of the stock market? I'm saying, if it is your long-term money, then you should stay invested. And now they've already contacted me and said, oh, thanks for having me stay invested because the markets are doing well. Doesn't mean that 2025 is going to be the same. It may be a little rocky as the new president-elect Trump starts to implement some of the things that he's driving for. So, Bruce?
Yeah, well, a couple things on that, just to take the baton from you. And we talked about this a little bit in the first show we did post-election. And again, I'm not trying to toot our horn, but anyone can go back and listen to any of our shows that we did this year, and there's always doom and gloomers out there. There was a lot of people predicting a market crash. You and I said we didn't think that would happen. Nobody has a crystal ball. Nobody knows what's going to happen in the short term, but we did not, you know, we did not think there was going to be a crash. A lot of people were predicting a big recession. We didn't think that was going to happen, and so far, at least in the short term, we've been right. But the larger point, Peg, even if we were wrong, your larger point still remains, and I know we say this all the time, but we can't say it too much because some people still don't understand it. If it's long-term money, if it's money you don't need in the next 10 years or longer, most of that money should be exposed to stocks. Why? Because historically, long-term, stocks have given investors their best rewards as compared to any other asset class, as compared to gold and silver and other precious metals, real estate, bonds. Long-term, stocks have given investors their highest rewards. Doesn't mean they can't go down in the short term. They can and they do. But long-term money should remain exposed to stocks. Short-term money shouldn't have been in stocks in the first place, so you don't have to try to guess what the market's going to do tomorrow or next week or next year, because if you need that money in that short period of time, it shouldn't be in the stock market. So we've said that consistently, and we will continue to say that consistently. And again, let's not forget, I think sometimes people think about investing in stocks, it's this nebulous concept, or it's this number, the Dow's up 400 points or the Dow's down. You're investing in companies. You have ownership in companies, and hopefully we're doing a good job of buying shares of companies that are smart, resilient, efficient, well-run, that will continue to capture market share, grow in value, and your investment will appreciate in value. So that's what you're investing in. And again, long-term money needs to stay there for almost all people. Peg?
Yeah, what's interesting is what's driven our economy is this innovation that we keep talking about, that America's best companies, they keep coming up with new ways of doing things. Well, with COVID and those years, you know, they put a lot of time and energy and foresight into technology. You know, things like Zoom and Microsoft Teams and all these mobile apps. And I got to tell you, Bruce, you know, within our company, we're just upgrading every system and making it more efficient and just the newer, better, shiny, you know, tech type of thing is coming out. And they're great. Another change was remote work. And that tended to that gave people more flexibility in their jobs. And then just digital services, you know, it's just accessing all sorts of things on our phone and our computers. And now probably the most interesting to me is in the health field, you know, what they can do to detect some type of disease or, you know, something that's wrong with people in that they can catch that a lot sooner than before. And then lastly, I just want to bring up, which kind of ties into the what we talked about earlier, the consumer confidence is up. And part of that is because the market has done really well in post-election and actually before. But there's a bunch of measurements out there about people's optimism. And there's one out of Michigan, which is a consumer sentiment. And the index is 70, and 50 is equals optimism. So you can see that people are out there, but that can quickly change, right? If something happens where all of a sudden our portfolios start to go down, people tend to want to, they want to hold on to the values of their account at the all-time high, right? And it's just not something where you can say, okay, I'm going to lock that in, but yet I still want to grow my money, you know, the highest I can. Well, that's not a recipe that you get, right? You need to ride it high, and sometimes you got to ride it low. But the long term, once again, I'm just going to repeat what I said and Bruce said, the long term, we've always been rewarded. So just make sure that you have enough money, like you said, Bruce, or the next 10 years, to make sure you have some on the safe side, you know, to live on. And then we're optimistic that the markets will do good long term for all of us if you can afford to stay in. Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, I want to talk about something too, and I don't think I even shared this with you, and I think I talked about this on one of the weeks that you were gone. But I had talked about, again, when we talk about the overall economy, and again, everybody, recognize that when Peg and I are talking about a good economy or a good stock market, we're talking macroeconomically, big picture. We understand, we're not insensitive to, that there are individuals out there that are struggling from paycheck to paycheck. We know that. We understand that. But Peg, I had said something about, yes, inflation was high. Yes, your bacon and your peanut butter are more expensive than they used to be. I get that. But look at the value of your 401k plan in the last 3 years. It's probably up, 40%. And I had some people comment to me after the show and say, what about those of us that don't have any extra money and we can't get into the stock market? We can't contribute to our retirement plan because we need every penny just to live. We don't have any discretionary money. And again, I feel terrible for people that are in that position, and I know that they are out there, and I don't want to ignore them when we have these discussions and these conversations. But Peg, there's also always a part of me that thinks, is there really no extra money? If we looked at your situation and we enhanced your efficiencies, is there no way that we couldn't find a few dollars a month for you to contribute to the stock market or to a retirement plan? And yes, I know that some people, there is no breathing room. It's paycheck to paycheck. But there's a lot of people, Peg, and I've learned this in my years of doing this. I've had a lot of people tell me over the years, I don't have any discretionary money. I need every penny. And we dig in and we find ways that maybe we can save them some money on their insurance costs, or maybe we save them some tax dollars. And anything that we can save in terms of enhancing efficiencies and give that money back to them, they can now use that for investments or lifestyle. But my point is, I've often been able to find investable dollars when people think there aren't any. So I'm not insensitive that some people, when I say, oh, but look how great the market's been, and they say, but I'm not in the market, I get that, but I challenge everybody to look at your personal financial situation and see if you can't find some inefficiencies and recapture some money that you might be able to also be an investor and have a retirement plan. Peg?
Yeah, and with technology today, I've always had a rant about not enough education around financial literacy and actually starting at a younger age. You know, I just feel like that is so important. But today now with technology, you know, to be able to go to wealthenhancement.com or just these resources that are out there for free, to be able to just educate yourself. And I know companies work hard on trying to encourage employees to at least sign up for their, the match, at least the match, and then possibly more. But a lot of that is to do with just being somewhat financially literate to just even ask people questions. And a big thing with me is hiding money from yourself. And if there's any way that you can take money out of your paycheck and have it just set aside automatically without the money going into your checking account and you having the ability to go spend that money, I think that's helped out tremendously over decades of time for people. As we do their reviews, you can just see that the paychecks, the money is just sweeping out. And seriously, you don't even think about that money because it never, ever hits your checkbook. Bruce?
Peg, there's two great points there I want to jump on also. The hiding money from yourself, and again, pay yourself first, however you want to phrase that. That is so important. And again, I think most people can do that. And then the second thing, I'm going to share a little bit of a personal experience, and I know she wouldn't mind. So my wife, Pamela, as you know, Peg, is a singer. And when Pamela and I first met, now in her world, she's been successful by most measuring sticks. She's had a very, very good career. She's done well financially. But when we met and I got to know her financial situation, she had very little in investments or savings. And when I challenged her on it or asked her about it, Frank, and I'm shortening the story a little bit, she's like, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. Nobody ever taught me that. So to your point about lack of education, you know, kids often don't get it from their parents because we don't talk about money. They don't get it in the schools. So where do they learn it? And Pamela is a smart person who had a good career and wasn't investing money. She is now. I've taught her how to do that. But she literally didn't know she was supposed to do that. So I think this lack of education that you refer to, I've seen it firsthand, and I think it's more prevalent maybe than we even realize.
Yeah, there's just no question. And I don't know how to turn that ship around. I see some subtle changes in, you know, educating people. And I'm talking about, you know, when kids go to kindergarten, you know, and almost like brainwashing them into the power of compounding. It's amazing. The other thing is that I think we can look forward to is still the technology and AI. So we do know that the stocks that have done really, really well have something to do with technology and AI. And I don't think we've even scratched the surface of how we as consumers can utilize AI in the near future. So I'm optimistic about that. It seems like people out there are optimistic about some of these bigger things that are coming up and coming, but it can be rocky, right? So technology, I look back, Bruce, at the late, you know, like 1997, 98, the late 90s. And, you know, it was the Y2K and that was scary. And you know, this AI is kind of similar to that. We don't really understand what's the ultimate that can happen with this AI. I think it's going to be great. I think some people feel like it's going a little bit too fast. They don't understand how it's being utilized. It's kind of like behind the scenes. But I feel like in the next two to 5 years, we're all going to be so versed on how it works, how can it help us, especially businesses. And businesses, as we know, behind the scenes have used it for a long time. So it isn't like it's brand new and hasn't been tested. It's the corporate businesses that have tested it, and now it's trickling down to us. So I personally am really excited about what that's going to bring, not only for myself utilizing it, but also for the markets and, you know, future growth. The America's best companies continue to innovate. Bruce?
Absolutely. So we said we were going to talk about reasons to be thankful. I sort of feel like we haven't really done that yet. So here's some things I'm thankful for. I'm thankful the election is over. I'm thankful for my family and my loved ones and getting together with loved ones this Thanksgiving. I'm thankful that the economy's been resilient and the continued innovation and the growth in the economy. The stock market's been good. Unemployment is low. GDP, the economy's strong. I'm thankful for all those things. I'm thankful that inflation, while it's still impacting people negatively, is getting better. I'm thankful for the fact that I don't think we're going into recession. It looks like we're going to have a soft landing. And I'm optimistic and I'm thankful that I think economically our future, at least to me in the short term, looks bright. Peg?
Yeah, I would actually concur with all the things you just said. And just that the families, I feel like, are uniting to when times are good, right? When it start when it starts to get a little bit of a struggle, that's when people tend to start butting heads. Or, and I've seen nothing but great where people are optimistic today, and I am thankful that people are optimistic and that that we have a bright future. Bruce?
Yeah, whether your candidate won or lost, I'm always willing to give the new elected president the benefit of the doubt and hope for the best and hope that they're successful and hope it, because, again, we're all Americans. We're in this together. If someone doesn't agree with me politically or someone doesn't agree with what's the best way to solve an issue, that doesn't make them my enemy. We're still Americans. We may disagree, but it's okay to disagree. But let's support the president-elect. And, again, I have far more reasons to be optimistic than pessimistic. Susie, second half of the show, we can certainly get the listeners involved. It doesn't have to be on this topic. It can be any financial topic that they want to talk about.
All right, very good. Thank you so much. And again, if you're listening right now and you want to jump in, the number to call, and we're already getting a number of questions from our listeners this morning, guys, 651-461-9226. Again, that number is 651-461-9226. Any question you have, they will take for you as we continue to talk about your money. 651-461-9226. If you want to call Wealth Enhancement directly, that's 888-6-ADVICE, or you can always email questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Back after this short break. Welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones. Once again, here is the Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor, Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Bruce Helmer. We want to remind people listening this morning, if they are having a question, they can always call us at 651-461-9226, or they can use that same line to text us at 651-461-9226. Welcome back, both of you. Bruce?
Thank you, listeners. If you joined us late, Peg and I have been talking about reasons to be thankful. This is our last show before Thanksgiving. Some of the things economically that we talked about were we have a resilient economy. The GDP or the growth of the economy is still good. Unemployment is low. Stock market is near all-time highs. Inflation is getting better. It was bad for several years, but it's improving. Consumer confidence is improving. Innovation and technology continue to enhance and drive the market. So there's a lot of reasons to be thankful. There's a lot of reasons to be optimistic. It appears we're going to avoid any recession, and we're going to have a so-called soft landing. On a personal note, I'm thankful for good health, my family, my loved ones. I'm thankful for Peg Webb. I'm thankful for Susie Jones. And I'm thankful for our listeners, and maybe they won't get involved in the show today, Susie.
Yeah, they sure do. A lot of people have been, one texter already wrote, I'm grateful for good health and the most valuable asset, life, and investing equals time. And this texter writes, God bless everyone. That was nice.
Oh, nice.
I think this is that time that we reflect on our lives and like you say, our gratitude for what we have. Do you want to jump in and get a text question right away, guys?
Sure.
All right, this is to Bruce and Peg. What are your thoughts on an Allianz Index Advantage Income variable annuity? And you can answer that, Peg, or Bruce.
Yeah, so Peg, looks like the texter is talking about a very specific strategy. As listeners probably know, Peg and I generally can't talk about specific things like that from a regulatory standpoint. But Peg, in terms of answering the question, since the texter was very precise, I think we, you know, owe it to the texter and other listeners to try to answer it the best we can. But they're talking about annuities in general, but they're talking about a very specific product. Do you know anything about that product, Peg?
Well, I think generally, yes, I do. And, you know, generally we talk about annuities just in general. Annuities are something that are issued by insurance companies, and they come in many different forms, meaning they'll take an annuity and you can purchase it. And one of the pros of having an annuity is, let's say you put $10,000 in, you can defer the growth and the income tax on that investment. So you take after-tax money and it's $10,000. You put it in there, and let's say it increased by 20%. And now the 20%, you don't get a 1099 at the end of the year. So you're basically pushing out your liability to the IRS. They were originally founded for the Teachers of America, you know, just a place that they could put money. Now, another negative might be is that insurance companies might cost more. The product might cost more. So you have to do your due diligence about what it costs. Then they keep innovating and making more creative types of annuities, not just the basic, hey, put $10,000 in and have a fixed interest rate and it'll grow. And by the way, you don't have to pay your taxes along the way, but you'll have to pull out, you know, the earnings one day. Well, they got more creative. And what they did is they've combined the stock market performance with the fixed annuity percentages. And how did they do that? Well, what they do is they have a fixed annuity, but the return, if you will, is given by how the stock market has performed. So they have what's called a cap and a floor. And this is quite a complex product, but it's very popular. So let's say that the increase that you could get is 9%. So it's going to be 9%, or then it's going to be 0%. Well, depending on what the market does that year, you would get a plus 9 if it's 9% or better for that particular year. The confusing part is for people that that when I say a year, a lot of times they're purchased by the date that you bought it. So if I went and bought one on December 1st, mine would be a year from December 1st to December 1st. So it's a complex product, but I think it's worth reviewing. And they're very popular, and there's all sorts of annuities and insurance companies out there. But what I would say is read the prospectus, you know, understand the product, and then which you should do anyway. Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, that was excellent. I'm just going to add a little bit. There are people in our space, and I'm not going to name them. I have before, but today I won't. But there are people in our space that would say annuities are always bad. Nobody should ever have an annuity. And I just don't agree with that. Annuities do have certain negative things that you talked about. They might be more expensive than other types of investments, but then you have to do a cost-benefit analysis and say, what am I getting for that extra expense, and is it worth it to me? And generally, what annuities can provide an investor is either a reduction of risk and or an income stream, a guaranteed income stream. In fact, if you look up dictionary definition of the word annuity, I think it'll say something like planned periodic payments. So most people that do an annuity, or that an annuity might be appropriate for, might be investors that want or need market exposure to get the return on investment that they want to achieve their goals and objectives, but they don't want to take the risk normally associated with the market. Well, the annuity might be able to mitigate some of that risk. Now, the trade-off might be some extra fees to get that protection, and or it might be a cap on your upside. But Peg, I'll volunteer. I personally have an annuity. I did an annuity earlier this year, and I did it specifically for the reason that I've gotten to a point in life where preservation is becoming more important to me than growth. But I don't want to give up on growth entirely. So I didn't want to take all my money out of the market and put it in fixed interest investments. I wanted to keep market exposure, but I wanted to reduce my risk. And yes, I'm reducing my upside, but at this point in my life, I'm okay with that. Preservation is now a higher priority to me than growth. I still want growth, but I want to reduce my risk to get some of that growth. So annuities are neither good or bad. They're not for everybody. We certainly don't recommend them to everybody. But in the right circumstance, it can be a really good strategy. And to those out there that say they're always bad, they're too expensive, they're too confusing, you lose your liquidity. Some of those things are true, but what do you get in return for those negative things? Peg, you were exactly right. Do your due diligence, do a cost-benefit analysis, work with a trusted advisor that gives you the material facts that you need to make a fully informed decision, and then see if it's good for you or not. So to the texter in that specific annuity, I'm not going to say it's good or bad or right or wrong, but I'm going to say we certainly think it's a tool in our toolkit that we can use for the right client. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226 if you have a question for Bruce or Peg. A texter wonders what your thoughts are on real estate investment trusts. They particularly are talking about watching these stocks with interest rates above 10%, what your thoughts are on these investments. Peg or Bruce, go ahead.
Thank you, Susie. So, Peg, commonly referred to as REITs, our industry is really good at creating acronyms. Real Estate Investment Trust, REIT, REITs. It's a way for people to invest in real estate without actually going and buying an individual property. Peg, you want to talk a little bit about REITs and how we use them or don't use them?
Yes. So here's another, you know, I loved how you said that we have this toolbox, because the toolbox is big. I mean, it's a lot of things that we can pick from, and depending on what we believe is going to be profitable in the shorter term or the longer term, we mostly are looking at diversification, meaning should you be buying real estate? We had a question last week or the week before, should I be buying gold? And so real estate is another part of the choices. So I usually say stocks, bonds, real estate, and cash. And so real estate is something that historically has not followed what the stock market has done or the bond market has done. So you have another asset class that kind of moves in its own right up and down, which can be another diversifier for you. There's different types of real estate. I think more so about, you know, corporate buildings or senior housing facilities. It could be schools. It could be just any, you know, large type of real estate that creates revenue for the client. And so one of the things that's a little bit more complex too about buying something with real estate is the tax benefits or the tax notifications that you get with real estate holdings get a little bit complex for people. So we tend to look at putting real estate in like an IRA form, where maybe you're deferring that versus, you know, getting these what are called K-1s on real estate versus a 1099. So that can add some complexity to a client's tax return. But overall, I believe real estate does have a place in portfolios. It can be a little bit more illiquid. So it has to be clients or prospective clients that have that extra liquidity to allow the real estate portion of their portfolio to stay put without, you know, taking interest from it. Bruce?
That was such a great answer, Peg. That was brilliant. I honestly can't add anything about REITs, but I'm going to take the discussion just in a slightly different direction. What I was thinking of, both, you know, when Susie read the text and you were answering, that I know there's people listening right now that are real estate investors. And I have clients that are real estate investors that go out and they own a bunch of rental real estate or single family homes or you know, whatever. And oftentimes these people don't really have money in the stock market, because as I've heard before from these folks, I know real estate, I understand real estate, I don't know and I don't understand stocks. And that doesn't mean that a person like that actually can't be a client of ours, because what I will usually say is, look, I don't blame you for, you know, you've been successful doing real estate and that's your area of expertise, But what often happens, Peg, is these people get to a certain point in life, and either the illiquidity is becoming an issue, and or the maintenance of if they self-manage these properties and they do, or even if they hire a, you know, a maintenance company, there's a lot of work involved and they want to slow down and work less. Or so they might liquidate a property and not want to buy more real estate. And now what do they do with those proceeds? Well, maybe now you come and talk to you or me and talk about a way to invest that money some way other than putting it back into another real estate property. So even people that are, you know, are quote unquote real estate people eventually end up with some exposure, I think, and should, to stocks. Again, if for no other reason than just diversification. And let's not forget, people that have done really well in real estate know, you know, location, know what to buy, when to buy. If it's lakeshore, that you don't make more of it, it's finite, and I get all those things. But historically, as an asset class, stocks have done better than real estate. So incorporating a little bit of stock into your real estate holdings diversifies the portfolio, mitigates some risk by diversification, and maybe even enhances long-term returns. So I thought of that when we were talking about REITs, and I know that's not directly related to the text question that was asked, but I thought I'd add that in. Any other comments, Peg, on real estate in general or REITs?
No, I think that was great, though. That was a I, too, find that if clients like real estate, they really like real estate, right? And sometimes it's hard to convince them that they need to diversify out of real estate. So that's it.
All right. 651-461-9226. A texter asks the question, with the strong returns in the equity market, could you talk about your approach to rebalancing?
Oh, that is such a great question, Peg. Rebalancing.
Yeah, we're a huge fan of rebalancing, but a thoughtful in doing it. Meaning, if rebalancing, just as a definition, is, you know, in your portfolio, you hold lots of different things. Meaning, you might own tech stocks, you might own, you know, industrial stocks, you might own food and beverage stocks. And some sectors do better than others at different time frames. So let's take the tech market. And the tech market has outperformed a lot of other categories recently. And what you do is you sell off some of that profits on the tech and you go buy the things that are low. We are a fan of rebalancing like that, but only to the point where we believe it makes sense. If we believe that tech is still going to run, you don't necessarily want to, you know, sell out of your profits in tech. So I believe that there is rebalancing within those type of stocks. I also talked about stocks, bonds, real estate, and cash. So just as a general category, rebalancing makes sense. You know, if one is doing better and then you buy in one of those bigger categories because they're lagging. But I find, Bruce, that it's not easy to do, right? Because you're predicting. You're predicting where these different asset classes are going in the future. Hence why we have this really large investment management team that follows all that and then makes those decisions on behalf of our clients, which I absolutely love. Bruce?
Yeah, that was really good. I'll add a little bit, Peg. You know, so rebalancing, here's an example, listeners. Let's say that you have a portfolio that's 50% stocks and 50% other things, real estate, bonds, cash. You have a 50-50 portfolio. And because of the growth of the stock market, you suddenly, and 50-50 is an appropriate allocation for your risk tolerance, your time horizon, your desired rate of return. And suddenly you wake up, and because stocks have done so well, you realize that now 60% of your money is in stocks and 40% is in those other things. You're out of balance. You wanted to be 50-50. So we might say, let's sell 10% of the stocks and reinvest in bonds and real estate and these other things to get it back to 50-50. Now, as Peg said, when we do that, we don't know we're selling at the top of the market. The stocks could still go a lot higher. But we do know we're selling them for higher than we bought them for, and we're locking in a gain, and we're going to buy something that comparatively is priced cheaper than stocks are. Buy low and sell high. Everybody says that, and everybody intellectually knows you should do that, but emotion gets in the way, and people normally do the opposite. They see something go up, and they go, wow, look at that. I want to get on that rocket, and they go buy it after it's just had a big uptick, and it's high. That's when we actually want to sell it, after we've had some gains and we can recognize and lock in those gains. So, Peg, to your point, you did a great job of it. I think everybody in our space that's good at managing money understands and realizes we want to rebalance. Rebalancing is a good thing, but almost nobody agrees on exactly how you do it and when you do it. Different people have different philosophies. Some people rebalance by the calendar. They, you know, quarterly or annually, they just, you know, when they hit a certain date, they rebalance. I don't believe in that. We don't believe in that. We're more, I think we're more thoughtful than that, but it's not an exact science. It's a good thing to do, but the devil's in the details. Susie, do we have time for one? Squeeze in one more?
Well, the question that I just saw was when something is, I guess this is my question, I'm going to be honest. If you see a stock go way down, like if they have an earnings report come out and their stock dropped 20%, sometimes I think, well, I'm going to call my advisor and say, buy some of that stock because it's likely to come back up after this short-term hit. Is that like trying to play the market? Is that a bad idea?
No, that's not. That's actually very logical. Peggy, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think it's logical. If you are familiar with that stock, we've seen a lot of stocks go down, and I've thought of the same thing. Why not double down now that it's down? But you also need to look at kind of the tax status, too, to be trading. And so I feel like there's other things that you need to look at to make that decision. Bruce?
Yeah, I agree with that. Again, it's going to vary by stock to stock, but again, you have to look at your core values, your goals and objectives, stay true to that, stay consistent to your plan. I always tell clients, don't get too shook up if it goes way up, way down. Don't get too euphoric if it goes way up. Stick to your plan. You don't change your plan just because there was a big increase or a decrease in something. You make changes to your plan based on life changes, based on life events, things that happen, goals change, time horizons change, and so on. But Susie, your thinking is spot on, and that's, again, what our portfolio managers here try to do is anticipate what's cheap and a good buy right now versus what's expensive. And I know we're almost out of time, and I just want to say quickly one more time, everybody, listeners, Peg, Susie, happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's nice. And happy Thanksgiving to you and to Peg. And a listener writes, thank you for my wealth enhancement advisor. He has the ability to calm my fears and make me hopeful that my goals will be met. What a nice text to end the show with. And again, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. And we're all here grateful for you listening, because if you weren't listening, we wouldn't be here. So we appreciate you and all that you do. Remember, if you didn't get your question answered, 1-888-6-ADVICE, 1-888-6-ADVICE. Also, email yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.